Curds and Curds with Carmen and Leanne, bringing you conversations with farmhouse cheesemakers and small dairy producers.
Lucky! Vanilla! Vanilla!
Back for a summer special in January on Sundays at 8:30 a.m.
Oh, dinner!
On your favourite station, 3CR. Welcome to Herds and Curds. This is the third week of our summer special, and today we're in conversation with Kerry Wilson and Paul Wilson, both from Nimbin Valley Dairy. Hello.
How are you going?
Welcome to the program. And we have Carmen here in France. Hi, Carmen.
Hi, Lee. Hi, Paul. Hi, Kerry.
Hi, Carmen.
Hi, Carmen.
Nice to talk to you both. Tell us, when did you begin Nimbin Valley Dairy?
That's a good question.
2015, 2005,
a long time ago.
Yeah, it's been a journey.
16 years?
Yeah, about that. There's no real start point because we started off just, we had a cow dairy and then we bought a few goats and it morphed into a goat dairy. So there's no real official time, but about 15 years. But in terms of... In terms of cheese, it's probably 10 years.
Okay. And tell us about that journey. Tell us how, because you've evolved enormously. So tell us about that trajectory into your current production.
Oh, well, it's funny. We've told this story a few times before, but it's now so far in the past. We kind of forget how we got here, but especially after the last 12 months. But We had a cow dairy and we supplied milk to the local dairy processor, and we had a drought, and we always have droughts in Australia, but this one was a big one, and we had to stop dairying for a brief period, and then of course then it rained and there were weeds everywhere because this is on the edge of a rainforest. When it rains, actually buckets down, and the whole farm got out of control. So we bought some goats, didn't we, to clear up the weeds. And they did such a good job, we thought, oh, well, maybe we should start
a little goat dairy.
A little goat dairy, yeah.
Which we found.
So in the meantime, you'd sold all your cows?
No, we just moved into another farm, that's all.
Okay.
Yeah. So they eventually all came back. We happened to find a little goat dairy for sale an hour from us with a little goat stand that we could milk six goats at a time, swing over. And we just started to... sell frozen goat milk into the industry because there was a need for a lot of people who like goat milk are happy to buy frozen goat milk from a health food shop. And then that morphed into Paul winning the scholarship to learn how to make cheese, and then we were on our way.
And what scholarship was that, Paul?
That was the Dairy Australia Scholarship, Cheese Making Scholarship in 2007, back in, remember Neil Willman, who used to run workshops back then? It was run by him and Dairy Australia, and it was an industry thing. Yeah. So.
And it still exists, that scholarship, doesn't it?
I think it does, yeah. I certainly went on for a number of years after I did it, and I think there's three offered a year, and you have a year of cheese making on and off, and they do an industry placement and put you... somewhere for some training. And the year before me, they used to send someone to Europe and for, you know, 6 weeks or so and go to Italy and France, whatever.
Did you go to France as part of your scholarship?
No, the year I started, they sent me to Murray Bridge.
Oh. Great farmhouse production. Yes, artisan. Perfect.
Not.
So you evolved enormously in your role as a cheesemaker.
Yeah, so that was great. It got us going, didn't it?
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's good to see all types of production, really, isn't it, when you're starting out?
Yeah. And I think that was the logic behind it, because initially with the bucket of money they had, they could send one person to Europe and do some cheesemaking training, or if they kept it within Australia, they could get three people through the scholarship with the same money. Mm. So there was logic behind it.
And today, how big is your herd, your cow herd and your goat herd, and what breed are you working with?
Cow herd, we milk 60 cows. Mm-hmm. They're Jerseys and Frisians, but we now have a brown Swiss bull going over everything.
Oh wow! So yeah, you already are the Jersey and the Friesian and Holstein, are they already crossed, or do you keep two separate breeds?
Some are crossed. Yeah, no, they're crossed.
Okay. Yep. And then everyone's going to be crossed with a Brown Swiss.
Then the next generation will be, yeah, an outcome of a cross.
So they should. Oh, that's exciting.
It is. Because Brown Swiss is just such a lovely temperamental cow, and great for Alpine cheese, I believe. So.
Amazing.
That's what the cheesemaker wants. That's what the cheesemaker gets.
Are you happy with that, Paul?
Yeah. It was on Yvonne's recommendation, I think. And talking to the guys in who are those guys in Vermont up the top? Andy and
the brothers.
Yeah, the brothers.
But anyway, they were saying just in terms of Alpine cheese and hard cheese making, the protein's much better in Alpine, in
Brown Swiss
cows. And
okay, so it's like, more adapted.
Yeah, like the French breed. So, that's
and is it easy to get hold of a Swiss brown bull?
Brown Swiss, yes.
Yeah.
Brown Swiss.
Yeah. Swiss browns are the mushrooms. Brown Swiss is.
Yeah. No, we got one. Yeah, about from down at Taree. So we shipped him up, and in March we'll have his first calves hit the ground.
Okay.
So we'll have a lovely calf rearing system in place, ready for to rear those lovely heifers.
Beautiful, and they're such an attractive cow. They're pretty. They're really pretty. They're beautiful.
Good temperament. Yeah.
Lovely temperament.
Yeah. And Carmen, we should just explain to the listeners who Yvonne is.
Paul, do you want to explain Yvonne or?
Yeah. Yvonne Lacher is a French cheese making consultant who we, through ASCA, the Australian Specialist Cheesemaker Association, we used to bring Yvonne out twice a year to run workshops for us. And we have done that
since 2013, I think his first visit to Australia was.
When was that?
I think it was 2013.
Yeah, right. So it's getting up there, isn't it? 8 years. Mm. And Alison Lensley, one of the members of ASCA, she managed to convince him to move to Australia last year, just as COVID hit.
Yes, exceptional timing.
And set up a cheesemaking school, so that's all happening in the background. And he's one of the world's leading artisan, small-scale cheesemaking knowledgeable men.
Mm.
And he runs all around the world teaching people how to make cheese. And he set up this cheesemaking school with Alison and some others in Castlemaine, isn't it?
Castlemaine, that's right. Also in collaboration with Amory and Carla from Holy Goat.
Yeah, right.
You two, what are your roles in the farm?
I'm cheesemaker. I do most of the inside stuff and Kerry does most of the outside stuff.
Manages
the business. And now, because of his health issues, he'll be doing all the management stuff from the office. And, I'll still be doing all the inside stuff, all the cheese making and all that sort of stuff. So.
And what about the animal care?
That's sadly in the last few months, that's been a bit lacking because Kerry hasn't been there. But. His Kerry's boy, youngest boy Daniel, he's been running the show down here, and he's been doing a great job with as much direction as we could give him from me being inside and Kerry being in a hospital bed. And
Daniel's always been involved in, or he's been involved in the business as an employee for a while now. Does that mean has he stepped up or he's expanded his hours?
Has his
role evolved?
Yeah, well, the whole business really changed over the last 12 months, Carmen, because COVID was actually quite good for our business in terms of sales, local sales, because it was so difficult and expensive to get French cheese in. Our production has nearly doubled and our sales have gone up, and which is where we wanted to go. We wanted to get a bit less focus on farmers market sales, which were up and down with the weather and everything and tourists, and have a solid base of a good wholesale market, which we now have in Sydney and Brisbane.
So you evolved from mainly, so all the retail of your product historically has been farmers market?
first few years was always farmers market, and then it evolved into restaurant wholesale and distribution. So obviously distributors, they buy and then they add their margin on and they sell again, so they get a different price, say, to a wholesale market where we're selling direct to, say, a restaurant or direct to a shop or a deli.
But talk us a little bit through the cheeses that you produce, in fact.
So in the soft cheese range, we do a couple of soft cow cheeses, and one's more a modern mushroomy, mild brie-style cheese that everyone would be familiar with from wherever they buy their soft cheeses from. And when I say familiar with that sort of style of cheese, and everyone's going to like it. If you're really into your cheese, you might find it a bit boring, but you're not going to upset anyone. And the other one that we make, it's our white cow. It's more based on French style of soft cheese. So I tell everyone it's the interesting cheese. So
okay, so more sort of farmhouse, barnyard flavors.
Yeah.
Too barnyardy though.
Not too barnyardy, but just not the type of cheese that people would normally get access to if you went into a supermarket in Australia. So, and that's Yvonne's influence, I guess. It's funny because when we have French customers come to the markets, they taste our cheese, and it happens like so often. Mm. It's not just, they're not just making it up. They say, oh, wow, this tastes like French cheese.
Yeah, that's a great compliment, I suppose, for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, all those trips are worth paid off, haven't they?
So that's Yvonne's influence. And before Yvonne, we worked with another French guy called Pascal, and who settled in that area. And so it's all been French.
Hello, I am Gabriel Gatte. 3CR is like a souffle, a challenge to make, but it can just go higher and higher and higher. Support 3CR.
This is Herds and Curds on 3CR with Carmen and Leanne, and we are in conversation with Paul and Kerry Wilson from Nimbin Valley Dairy. Let's head back to the conversation where they're discussing their goat's cheese.
And we've got the equivalent in goat, a white goat, which is a beautiful cheese, just a brie-style cheese. And we do a wash goat, which is a washed rind goat cheese.
Now, that's barnyardy, Carmen.
Okay, fantastic. And so that's matured for how long?
It's what, sorry?
Matured for how long?
Only 3 or 4 weeks.
Mm.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Then it gets wild.
And we also do our St. Billy, which is based on the classic Southern French style goat cheese, like your Peladon or some more, that sort of thing, just a geolactic goat cheese. So that's our basic range of soft cheeses. Hard cheeses, we do our Montinardi, which is a cow milk cheese, and it's based on the cheeses that the early Italian settlers used to make when they first arrived in this area.
Okay.
And we lay claim that it's Australia's only truly regional cheese that's developed in the country.
What do the other cheese makers say about that?
Oh, they don't know.
They don't know, yeah. But they're going to know now.
Yeah, you're on radio.
Oh, that's right.
But what I did is I went, because I grew up, Kerry and I both grew up in dairy farms, not all the dairy farms, but a lot of the dairy farms when we grew up, they'd had cheese making equipment there because people used to make little batches of cheese for themselves. And
I've never heard that. That's incredible.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much they made it, but they did have. My grandfather was a cheese maker. And
really, Paul?
Yeah. And I went to the Italian kind of retirement village in Lismore. A lot of these people have died now, unfortunately, but 10 years ago I went and spent some afternoons with them and talked about how the cheeses they used to make when they were first arrived in Australia, and they described what they did. So I went home and did it, And that became Monty Nardi, which is...
Oh, that's great.
That's amazing. Has there been a large community of Italians in Lismore? Are you in Lismore? Yeah, yeah, around there.
Northern Lismore. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's an area just south of you called New Italy.
Yeah, okay.
It's one of those tragic stories of a boatload of Italian immigrants left Italy in the late 1800s to come to their new... They were sold passage on this ship and promised all these great things. Of course, they didn't know where they were. It was pre-internet, so nobody could check where they were. And the bloke just pulled the boat up by the river at near Ballina here and said, "Oh, you're here," and he dropped them off. And
That's it. And they survived.
Yeah. So I think actually first he dropped them up in some island in New Guinea. And they were starving to death up there anyway. Someone went and rescued them and brought them back here. I can't remember the details. But anyway, it was horrific. They were lied to and whatever. Anyway, they set up, they got off the boat and made their own little houses and did what everyone did in the late 1800s. And, they made cheese. So I went and talked to them and Monty Nardi as a result. And actually last weekend there was a lady, I wish I knew her full name. She was a Casa Grande, which is one of the local families. She started eating the cheese and she started crying.
Oh.
The market. She said, "Oh, I've got to go. I'm going to cry. And just because it reminded her of her childhood.
So that's fantastic. That's wonderful.
And why it's called Monty Nardi is because our farm is under Mount Nardi.
Oh, okay.
Nardis are an Italian family.
Yeah.
So we call it Monty Nardi.
And on that note, let's head into a track by Jess Ribeiro. Vignette Spirit in White. We'll be back soon with more conversation with Kerry and Paul Wilson of Nimbin Valley Dairy. You're tuned to 3CR.
Take my hand, lead me out of here. 'Cause it's cold and dark and I'm full of fear. And young, an angel who smells like flowers. She sings to me past the hours, lead us into a new day. Waiting for the spirit in white.
And this is Carmen and Leanne with Herds and Curds on 3CR. We're in conversation with Kerry Wilson and Paul Wilson of Nimbin Valley Dairy. Can you tell us a little bit about the environment and the landscape? I mean, yep. You both said you're from dairy farming backgrounds. Did you grow up around there, or why did you come to get the farm that you have now?
Kerry's family comes from Kyrgyzstan, and my family comes from north of Lismore. So we both grew up dairy farms here. We went to a 21st birthday or some birthday party anyway. Met some people. And they told us that this farm was up for lease and sale where we are now. And we drove by. It's a beautiful place. We always wanted to stay in dairying, but we didn't want to do the mainstream dairy thing.
We kind of didn't fit into that mold, Leanne.
No. describe your farm for the listeners.
So we're just
5 minutes outside of Nimbin.
5 minutes outside of Nimbin, yeah, on the edge of a rainforest. Mm. And Kerry's got three boys.
Well, adults. sons now.
Now, but they weren't. They weren't when we started. And the joke always was that we were two poofs living on the side of a mountain with 100 goats, rearing three boys, and we were the least strange thing in town.
Yeah, probably.
That's great. Sure. Yeah, because the diversity of Nimbin is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, and 20 years ago, nobody even blinked an eyelid. Yeah.
Well, you're sitting outside whilst you're doing this recording, so listeners can probably hear that might be happening. I've heard birds.
Have you heard that cow mooing?
Not yet.
I can.
Oh. Okay. And it looks very lush. We're on Zoom. It looks very lush. So, yeah. Is it a sort of great dairying?
Yeah, it's a great dairying. Yeah. A little bit too wet of anything. We're one of the few places in Australia that's just so incredibly wet.
Do you have any concerns with climate change? Have you noticed anything happening, or are you planning ahead for any changes?
Well, last year we ran out of water, and the rainforest on the farm caught a fire and burned it. So it's just everything's so much more intense, isn't it? The spring was so hot this year. It was summer weather in spring, and we had, was it last year, the year before, we had 700 mils in 24 hours.
So there's extremes.
But the goats have got shedding, so it's a little bit wet in this part of the world for goats, but they've got shedding, they have a lot of feet.
And because, can you choose a breed that's more adapted to wet conditions?
What we find is that crossbreeding works well. So we've got a sun and buck at the moment. But next year we'll probably swap him out for another British Alpine. or something like that.
Tomberg, yeah.
The crossbreds do much better than purebred animals.
Yeah. And I mean, an alpine or a classic French alpine, they're kind of accustomed to wet conditions also in mountains. Maybe not so much the humidity that you have.
Do you have? No, we do call it humidity.
Yeah, humidity. Yeah.
In February. When it's
hot and wet.
Yeah, humid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right here for that long.
No, I forget my English now.
She's so French right now.
Yeah. Do you have big problems in France?
Well, I've started to worry because at the moment I've got a small leak in my stable. And so I'm starting to worry a little bit about humidity and feet. I haven't seen any problems for the time being. Although I have not seen that. I mean, I haven't worked a lot with goats in France, but I've never seen bad feet problems because of humidity. Although I don't think I'm experienced enough in this context to really judge. But at the moment, I'm not worried about that.
When you're saying that the goats don't really thrive as well in the wet, is that the main issue? Feet problems?
If it rains on a farm, a cow will just keep on eating. The whole dairy herd of goats will just run home if it sprinkles back to the shed and look out the shed until it stops raining, and then they'll wander out again.
I think that's an interesting point to try and actually develop a breed that will become a little bit more accustomed to rain, because in Australia that's what I've seen. But when I worked in Switzerland, the goats were accustomed to a little bit of rain. So actually, unless it was belting down, they didn't actually run into the stable. That's something I'm trying to push a little bit in my herd now. Not too extreme, because obviously you want your animals to be comfortable, but to not, as soon as it rains, to not also encourage them to run back to the stable either. But,
They're such princesses, really.
Yes, they can be.
Compared to a cow, good old cows are stoic and solid, whereas goats are a little bit more precious. And they need a little scratch under the chin every morning to say hello and make sure everything's okay. I'm still here, Kerry. I'm still here. It's like having 100 wives. All wanting attention.
It's funny. When we first bought We bought some goats, some central Queensland. It was dry. I can't remember where they were from, but it was dry anyway. And when we brought them here, every time a little shower happened, that all run back into the shed. But like we're up in the mountains here and a cloud goes over and drops rain. So it'll be a little shower for 30 seconds and then fine up again. So all the goats would run back to the shed and the sun would come out again, and they'd all go back out. But after a few weeks, they'd realize that the, you know, that was too exhausting. So they did start to get...
They adapted.
But it must have been pretty hilarious at first.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing.
Yeah. Great that you've been sitting in the backyard chatting to us on Herds and Curds, and we'll have to make this a two-part program because it's been too interesting to stop talking. So we'll just let our listeners know that we've been talking to Kerry Wilson and Paul Wilson of Nimbin Valley Dairy, and it's been really interesting and fun talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us on Herds and Curds on 3CR.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Kerry. Really lovely.
I hope the cicadas don't cause too much problem.
It's atmospheric. Listeners can tune in on Sundays at 8:30 a.m. to hear Herds and Curds, or otherwise we do have our podcasts, so you can find us wherever you find your podcasts, and you can also follow us on Instagram.
Herds and Curds.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our outro music is by Bart Willoughby and Ross Hannaford, called Blue Nude from the Buckskin album.